The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Yeah, it gives me great pleasure to welcome Philly McMahon to studio, a former Dublin senior footballer, of course, and lots of you would have read his book, The Choice, a couple of years ago. Philly, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me in.
Yeah, thanks a million for coming in. You were just telling me during the ad break there that you're back from High Rocks and in Rome.
Yeah.
Everyone's at it.
Yeah, it's such a buzz at the minute in the fitness industry, but we've built up a great community from it. So the gym there, BDU7, brought 35 over to Rome.
Oh, that's great.
So it was great.
Yeah, good buzz. So you have the gym. Obviously, you've got the footballing identity and everything as well. And I mentioned the book. And I guess on foot of that, you might be out there talking a little bit about addiction or deprivation and mental health and stuff like that. So you have lots of different hats, as it were. Had you, when you were a young lad, had you a clear sense of what you wanted to be when you were older?
Definitely not. But I suppose when you grow up in Ballymun, you do organically grow this kind of, you could call it a chip on your shoulder a little bit. You want what a lot of people have, and not knowing that you have a lot of what people don't have. And for me, that gives you this burning desire inside you that only in my late 30s you look back and you're going to go, okay, I can understand why that is there. Like, it's part of my paradigm, it's part of my habits. And it's a strength and it's a weakness. It's a strength that, you know, you're constantly driving for something, but then it's never turned off. It just keeps going, you know. So it's important to be able to kind of be conscious of dialing that down a little bit, particularly when you want to spend time with family and loved ones.
So I wouldn't say an addictive personality, is it? But or just always wanting that bit more, is it? Or
yeah, like, I mean, that's probably why I got to the stage where I did with sport. I think, again, it has to, when you reflect back into your value set. My mom is a workaholic. My dad was a hard grafter as well. But yeah, I think, you know, when you have that and then marry that with then a purpose, you know, in terms of trying to get after things that you know, I was very lucky to get a profile from playing with the Dubs, and we won a good bit and that helped. And then that gives you an opportunity. So taking that opportunity and trying to help people, particularly, you know, when you have this kind of an emotional dunt of bereavement and losing my brother to a drug addiction struggle, like that for me, again, is all opportunity. So Ballymun is an opportunity, and I've said it numerous times, you know, the value set certainly that my mum and dad gave me and my siblings was another.
You know, sometimes they say that saying no to things, it's like a middle class luxury. You know, this idea that when you grow up, and not saying people who are middle class grow up wealthy, but when you grow up and you're not worried about money, or you're not worried about deprivation, you're not worried about food in the table, it's not a feature in the house, that you don't necessarily maybe have that fear about any of those things. And that maybe if you're from a community like Ballymun, that's what drives that kind of always working, always, because somewhere in your subconscious there's a memory of that. Of that fear. Is that fair, do you think?
For me, like, I always had the attitude that when it came to kind of business, that if the business shut tomorrow, I started with nothing, so, you know, I'll be okay.
Yeah.
You know?
When did you gain this level of self-awareness? When were you able to say this type of thing about yourself or recognise this in yourself?
Towards the end of my career, I started delving into that kind of self-discovery piece of understanding programming, understanding, you know, what I'm about, what kind of creates who I am, you know. And I would have went to the States and done a couple of things over there, and I started working I've been working with people since I'm 18 or 19 when I set up the gym, you know. Mm. So I've been working with people a long, long time, but actually educate myself on how people are what they are. And certainly then that was by doing that, I was actually working on myself as well, you know. So once you start to go after a self-discovery piece, you'll understand there's a power inside you to get after what you want in life.
Yeah, it's funny because the things you described there, like the values, you know, of working hard, I guess you're so synonymous with the gym, Gavin Dublin. It's actually Pat Gilroy's this great story, you know, about when the Dubs being hammered in an All-Ireland semi-final and writing down all these names in a piece of paper, he said he'd never play for Dublin again. And only that those around him said, no, listen, those lads actually have the right value system. You know, we just need to change a few things. But it's actually what's most important once the players have a certain level of ability, obviously, is that they have the right value. Once you've got that, it's so much easier to mould them into a winning team. And I it always stuck with me. I just find that kind of, and he goes on to say most of the team went on to win about 8 All-Irelands, which shows what he knew.
Jesus,
you know?
Imagine if he got rid of him.
Yeah,
that
I know. Yeah,
but he got rid of me in 2008. It brought me back, and you know, so no, but the you know,
but it's true of so much. It's true of what you were talking about there, running a business or just life in general. It was true of molding a team into winning an All-Ireland, and I often say it's true in any line of work. Most things are not rocket science. It's actually about, if someone has the right value system, they'll actually be successful in almost any line of work.
Yeah, like I mean, I'm in the area now of management. I'm working with the nice senior footballers, and you know, when you work with a group of people, whether that be in a corporate setting or that be in a sporting setting, that's much more difficult because there's a huge amount of complexities there. And you've got so many values coming in. And I think the best way I've kind of looked at the chemistry of a group is actually describing your team like a set of dogs. And what type of dog do you want your goalkeeper to be? What type of dog do you want your full back line to be? Half back line, midfielders and so on.
What type of dog were you?
Oh, everybody could tell you what type of dog I was playing. I definitely wasn't a Labrador, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, you know, I have a nice fluffy golden retriever at home. I don't think of you, Philly, when I'm rubbing that dog, I have to say.
So and then when you really pull it back down to individuals, there's definitely, you know, ways of actually getting people to focus on where they're at, where they are in terms of what habits are good for them, what habits are bad for them, and creating that next level of a person. Like, so I work with a lot of young footballers, I work with boxers, MMA fighters, and not just from a strength and conditioning point of view, from a mindfulness point of view, from a mindset point of view. And that's the work we do. We work on them, first of all, creating a vision and a fantasy, and then we go after kind of getting them to understand who they are first. Because those little things are the difference. Yeah. If I could just give you a quick example.
Yeah.
Do you ever see the person that's always late all the time?
Yeah.
And the boss would probably go, "Why are you late all the time?" You know, and he goes, "I don't know." You know, you keep showing up late. And in school, you probably would have got lions or detention for that.
Yeah.
But that's programming. That's passed into you. Like, the person that's early all the time, that's programming. So instead of punishing, you got to understand the programming of the individual and try flip that by them being curious to how they can actually change that habit.
Yeah.
And it's like weight loss. You know, when you're getting people to eat healthy, it's not about just getting them to stop eating unhealthy food. They have to replace that with good food. So yeah, when you get rid of a habit, you have to replace it, or else it'll only be short-term goal or short-term change. You'll be back to that old habit.
And when you're approaching a team, are you doing that then on an individual? Like, as in, it's one thing to change the programming of someone who's turning up late for school or wants to change their eating habits. But when you've got 35 lads on an extended panel down in Nace, are you changing the programming of a team or 35 individuals?
It's difficult to do in a large group of that size, but you'd be trying your best to bring the best out of each individual,
yeah,
as much as you can. The difficulty is the time. I went to Denace in June and I didn't go in at the start of the season. So yeah, you've only, if you're looking at the timeline you have with them, you're trying to, you know, add to what they already had because they've been successful, albeit Kildare Championship has been really, it's been tight over the last 4 years. A lot of people outside of Kildare probably will think, oh, Nace have won comfortably over the last 4 years, but they haven't. It's been tight. And the target gets bigger on Nace's back because they're going for that fifth title. But the lads don't think that way, in fairness to them. The lads are always kind of thinking of the next game. Probably a cliche thing, and it's not something that I brought into them. It's not coming from a Dublin thing. It's just what they already had. So myself and James Burke, who we brought in as a coach, we're just adding to what the management team have done there before, because they've done a lot of good work.
And when you say then, you know, the mindfulness piece is important, how different is that today? Say that when you start it, playing either senior club with Kickhams or with the Dubs, yeah, you know, so you're talking about the kind of mid-noughties.
Yeah, it was always like all the stuff that I've discovered from the psychology side of sport has always been there. It's just I actually haven't really understood it enough to break it down and go, okay, what actually happened? What's going on? Like, I mean, if you look at that Dublin team, you'd nearly need to do a PhD on it to understand how that happened. Like, it's so, like, if you look at the soccer world now and you look at a Man City or a Liverpool,
yeah,
like, it's so difficult for you to go on a reign of what Manchester United did, you know,
yeah.
And that's no different to what Dublin did either. Like, you know, if you look at, I said at the end of the All-Ireland last year to Thomas Niblock on BBC, I said to him, I don't think that Armagh team are going to retain that next year. And he was like, how can you say that? Like, it's,
yeah,
because I've been there. It's so difficult. Every year, the team will change. One player in, one player out changes the culture.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just that, you know, understanding. Like, again, I'm very fortunate that now I'm practically going after it as well as theoretically. Like, you know.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, the psychology thing, when you say it's always there. There was, I won't out him, but the lad who won quite a few All-Irelands for Kilkenny, I remember him being on the radio years ago, and he said, don't buy into any of that sports psychology, you know, it's all kind of guff or whatever. And then a couple of minutes later, he was describing how he always packs his gear bag in the exact same order for every single match. Yeah, everyone has to go in. I just thought, like, the lack of self-awareness, you know what I mean? That's psychology, that's what you're doing there.
You can't dismiss psychology, because everything is the way we think. You are what you think, you know, and nobody can actually argue that. So if you are a player that plays with confidence because you pack your bag, that's psychology. Like,
yeah. So the Dublin team that I mentioned, say, and that was so successful, and you mentioned as well, are you in any way surprised Jim Gavin is running for president?
No, I'm not actually. Like, I mean, some players I've seen come out and said they have been surprised, but for me, working with Jim for so many years, all stemming back to the under-21s.
Yeah.
I was very lucky to be picked as his captain on the 21 team that year. And, you know, like, he's a person that, I suppose the reason why other players are probably saying that is he's probably not a person that would always look for the limelight.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are a candidate for the presidency, you're going to be, you know, in the biggest limelight of the country at the present time. So maybe that's where that's coming from, but for a person that we talk about value sets at the start of this conversation, he has,
yeah,
for me, got a brilliant value set and work ethic to be a brilliant president. I'm not sure. I don't really know Catherine Connolly that well. I'm left-leaning politically.
Yeah.
I don't have any political party that I'm associated with. But all I can speak for is my experience with that man, and I think he'd be a brilliant president.
Yeah, he was. He's something of a mystery, I guess, to us on the outside. You know, you've all known him a lot better. Which, I look, to a certain degree, lots of people would ask people from Kilkenny about Brian Cody. You know what I mean? And look, he's as much a mystery to us in Kilkenny as he is to people outside. But you know, was he a motivator in the dressing room, or was he somebody? You know, he's very famously very quiet on sidelines. You know what I mean? And he would let the players work it out, is how it always looked to me. Once the game started, you know what I mean, he very much handed control over. But what, you know, how did that manifest in the dressing room or in the build up to games?
Yeah, like, I mean, he certainly had a persona that you wanted to work for him. You wanted to get things done for him. Didn't have to scream at you that you weren't doing anything wrong. Didn't have to give out to you. Just know, you just look at him and go, I've let you down. Like, you know, so there was a, he was the type of person that you created a relationship with that you wanted to work for, that you wanted to graft for, and that you didn't want to let him down. And also, he had a management team around him over the years that represented that also, you know. So I think that was the crucial thing, that he was their man, he was their leader. We wanted to get after supporting what his vision and what our vision were, you know. So that player-centric thing is mentioned a lot. But just taking that back and then looking at what he's doing right now, like, and what, how would that transfer into possibly him becoming the president, like, you know. Behind the scenes, there's a huge amount that people won't know what he did. You know, we talk about Jim Gavin, the Dublin football manager. I remember so many occasions that, you know, I'd reach out to him and I'd say, would you come in and do a talk in Addiction Association, or even would you come into Mountjoy and do stuff in there when I had my programme in there? And there was never an issue. There was never, no. It was like, give me the date, let me know, I'll be there, like, you know.
Yeah.
Never once did he let me down in terms of that stuff. I think that was, I'll never forget the day. I would say that that Dublin team was very intelligent, right? But we had a few head cases, right? Maybe I fall into that a little bit, but we used to have this thing called squeeze the orange, which basically means, you know, get all the information that we possibly could within the group and make sure we don't hold it in to benefit the group. Whatever that may be, physically, tactically, technically, mindset, whatever it may be. But there was times where we travel down the country and you'd have, you know, if you were to walk up the aisle on the bus, you'd see lads reading constantly. And you'd have the messers down the back, not doing anything, chilling out, whatever. And I'll never forget, I was asked to go on the Goshka board. I was nominated by President D. Higgins, myself, and Justin McAleese. And I spoke to Secretary General Art O'Leary and I said to him, I says, Art, look, I'm interested in politics. I don't want to go into politics.
Yeah.
But I've been educated from a very young age on Ulster politics because of my father.
Yeah.
I'd like to understand the dynamics, the structures and everything around the country. And if you can get someone to do a couple of sessions with me in the Oris each month, I'll go on the board of the Goshka. And that's what happened. And I remember sitting on the bus, I was sitting beside the toilet, a stupid place to sit, but Jim would always walk up and down the bus just to check what people are reading because he knew it benefited us.
Yeah.
Now most people don't think that way. Most people kind of go, I'll just sit down here and we'll get to the journey and might chat to a couple of players. But I was reading the constitution that day and he was walking up and he's like, what's that? And I says, that's the constitution. He's like, that's a strange book to be reading. We didn't know I was getting mentoring in the Oris. So to think of that and to think where he's at now and what he's going for now is incredible. But again, for me, you know, I just think he would be a brilliant fit.
Yeah, well, listen, interesting few weeks ahead for him and all the candidates. Philly, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks a million for coming into us.
Thanks for having me.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.